You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to episode number 105 of the Fabulous Peltoncast. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Carcino.
And we are coming to you from Renton, Washington, home of the Super Bowl 48 champion Seattle Seahawks.
And we should get to this week's beer quickly because a toast is in order.
It indeed is. So we are drinking here from Burnside Brewing in Portland, Oregon, which I picked up on my last trip to Portland.
RIP.
Yep, the city's gone now.
And from Burnside Brewing Company, we have Free the Juice Seasonal Pale Ale brewed with orange zest and blood oranges.
That sounds good. Very orangey.
Should I crack this open? The juice.
Yeah, I don't know what else you would do with the beer. We're not just going to look at it. That's not the way this thing works.
Are you ready for some free Shaquem?
Is that going to be a thing?
You think we're not going to want to free him?
I mean, you play him over KJ Wright? That's your plan here?
I'm okay with it.
Wow. You guys are you people.
What do you mean you people?
Shaquem Griffin people.
The free Shaquem.
You are too high on Shaquem Griffin. I hate to break it to
you. If he's not a Pro Bowler at some point in his career, it'll be a disappointment.
Like as a special teamer?
Just anything. A special teamer would be fine.
Okay.
But I'm expecting him to be a Pro Bowler as a linebacker.
Look, I'm in on Shaquem Griffin. Just like, let's be cool about the fact that this is a guy who no one else wanted to draft in the first 4.5 rounds. Like, let's keep expectations reasonable.
Wow. Like Doug Baldwin.
Or Richard Sherman.
Like Richard Sherman.
But I'm saying, let's not put too much on his shoulders.
Shaquem movement is going to put free Craig Chambers to shame.
Well, the free Craig Chambers. Oh, what a glorious time in Husky football that was.
I wonder, was it a thing that existed outside of us?
Yeah, I think it is.
There
wasn't Twitter yet, so it's tough to say. I don't know if it existed on Dogman at that point, but perhaps. Anyways, as you mentioned.
What are we toasting to?
We are toasting to third Pelton brother, Ben B., who parlayed his successful appearance on our post-NFL draft recap into a spot writing about the Seattle Seahawks for The Athletic Seattle, which announced a new round of staffing on Monday, including not just Ben B., but also Stephen Cohen of SeattlePI.com, who's going to be their editor over there. Mike Sean Duggar will also cover the Seahawks for them. And then Jason Jenks going to write features. So
Jenks!
Very exciting. Very exciting additions to The Athletic Seattle.
Wow, another PeltonCast success story.
Yes. We're going to take 100% credit
heard that draft review podcast and they said, hire him today, literally.
They work very quickly because the podcast, I mean, we put it out late Sunday night, but this was like 10 a.m. Monday morning.
The Athletic negotiates fast. They come in hot. So I think a toast to Ben B. for joining The Athletic. People can subscribe to The Athletic.
They can, yes.
At, I assume, theathletic.com.
Yes, theathletic.com/Seattle. There was a special promotion going on with the new writers. You can subscribe with that and get a discount.
Should I go through a specific story, like click on a Ben B. story and then subscribe so that he gets credit for it?
I mean, you'd have to ask Ben B. I can only speak to ESPN Insider subscriptions.
But the answer is yes.
But I think that the promo codes that they gave out to announce the new writers, that perhaps those will be specific to the individual writers.
Okay. Well, I need to figure this out for my subscription to The Athletic.
So you can give him credit?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
I'm going to subscribe to The Athletic before ESPN Insider.
Oh, no. Come on.
Full page ad in the newspaper. Two words. You're welcome.
Anyways, if you haven't listened to that draft recap podcast with Ben B, would encourage doing so. Would also encourage you to still fresh, if you haven't checked it out, and fittingly still fresh, last week's Taco Time podcast, one of our most popular of all time.
Really?
I think so. Can I read some feedback?
Okay.
All right, I received this email from a former coworker of mine, Randy Cote. Randy wrote, "That was by far my favorite episode of the PeltonCast ever. I've always liked you, Pelton, but hearing that pure hate in your voice and in your heart for the, quote, other Taco Time has endeared me to you even more. P.S. If you ever need a Taco Time field correspondent, my red phone is standing by." But amazingly, that wasn't the only Taco Time correspondent offer we got, because Third Pelton brother Nate Taggart revealed to us that before he listened, that he also worked at Taco Time for 3 years in high school and was here to answer any of our questions. Then after listening, said that Chris Smith beautifully said everything he feels as a fellow member of the Taco Time fraternity, which I haven't clicked on this hashtag. I don't know if there's any other uses of that hashtag. I could have listened to Taco Time talk for another hour. I'm also thrilled to know that there's a thriving Third Pelton guest brother, Taco Time fraternity.
I think.
So here's the thing.
Okay.
I also, by the way, talked to multiple people who said that they were unaware of the distinction between the two Taco Bells.
Really?
So again.
Still Taco Times. Not Bells. Anyway.
Oh, did I say Taco Bells?
Yes.
The Pelton cast is out here changing lives.
Changing lives.
But here's the thing.
Oh, my God. There's a thing.
In the spirit of our spinoff podcast, Trader Bros, I think it's time that we consider a regular Taco Dive podcast.
You want to actually do it?
This sounds like a joke, but I don't think it's a joke. I think it's serious.
I was going to ask you, what is the name of our Taco Time spinoff podcast?
I mean, it's got to be either Talkin' Taco Time.
God, that's too good.
Yeah, or Taco Time Talk.
I like Talkin' Taco Time.
Talkin' Taco Time is better.
Okay, I was actually thinking, that's really funny that you say that, because I was driving earlier today thinking about Taco Time as I do.
One does. Before even going to Taco Bell.
And I was like, we need to have this. I was like, this might be the time. Trader Bros is fun, but you're not actually into Trader Joe's.
I'm not.
So it doesn't work as well. We're both equally into Taco Time.
I mean, I've actually considered like what our segments could be on Talkin' Taco Time.
Talkin' Taco Time.
Like we're reviewing whatever is new to the month. I don't know, or to the menu. I don't know if we can sustain it like monthly. Maybe that's like a quarterly podcast, Talkin' Taco Time.
Is it on the Peltoncast feed or is it a separate feed?
I think it's a separate feed within the Peltoncast network.
It's funny that we're talking this. This is the first time we're talking about this like on the air. We're forming a podcast network live. This is just like that startup podcast right here. Right here. You're hearing all about
People
it.
People will always look back on this episode.
And you had a name for it. Wow. Talking Taco Time. I like it. So when's the first one? Are we going to have guests on?
I think we should have guests. I think we should have a Third Pelton brother, Nate Taggart, should be on as a guest.
Well, and Randy, obviously.
Yes. So
he's got the red Taco Time phone.
You know, maybe actually, you know what we start with? Maybe it's eventually a quarterly podcast, but we start with like reviewing like every item on the Taco Time menu.
Okay.
Is that a good Talkin' Taco Time?
I don't know.
Idea?
We need segments is what we need.
All right. We're going to continue workshopping this. So if you have any feedback.
If you have any thoughts on Crustos.
At PeltonCast on Twitter or PeltonCast@gmail.com. Share with us your Talkin' Taco Time feedback. We'll have to get the email address for Talkin' Taco Time off
later. TalkinTacoTime@gmail.com.
For now, we're just going to run it through.
Get the Twitter account right now.
Before anyone else
just
gets
to be
it.
Safe right now, nobody else has heard this. We need the talk at Talkin' Taco Time.
That's a little long though. I think maybe at Taco Time Talk is the Twitter account,
not the name of the podcast.
Also, by the way, this is all copyrighted infringement. I don't know how we're fortunately Taco Time has been very Northwest has been very cool with everything so far.
We're gonna get sued by the other Taco Time.
Oh, no.
Bastards, you know they're coming for us.
We have said some slander as they throughout the other time.
It's just a Taco Time, not Northwest slander podcast.
That's all it is. We just talk bad about them, even though we've never even been there. That's the best part.
Oh, that would be a great segment if we actually went there.
But then we'd have to go there.
Good point. Good point.
We did get a question on Twitter from a listener in a Taco Time non-Northwest region asking the question, should they go to non-Northwest Taco Time?
And really... it felt like people were a little bit divided. Taco Time was very Taco Time Northwest was very anti though.
They weren't anti. They just wanted to make it clear, very clear, that they were separate places. My conclusion was
there was a meme from Taco Time Northwest.
Well, it definitely wasn't the Spider-Man pointing meme.
No, they see no similarities between the two locations at all.
I mean, they just said no comment was their original reply. And then said, we are really very, very different restaurants. We source locally and make our food fresh. We can't say that about the other guys.
All right.
So that's some shit. Like Taco Time's at Taco Time Northwest is willing to come on our podcast for the segment talking trash about the other Taco Time. But my conclusion was, yes, you should go because even a fake Taco Time is better than no Taco Time at all.
I don't know if that's true.
They still have the crisp burrito. There's still a lot of menu commonality.
I don't know if it's the same. I personally am going to trust Taco Time on this. Also, the Pelton cast response to Dane Karma, who said, "Pelton at K Pelton, this is your fault," with the "you're welcome" response.
Yeah.
It's too good. Yeah. Full page ad in the paper. You're welcome.
I wasn't even necessarily thinking of that. The other place that we're sending people to, continuing to drive a lot of traffic to, this very evening was Tacos Chukis, where third Pelton brother Mike B went to go get the Pelton cast special, which you'll recall is two baby burritos, two house tacos, and two tecates.
God, it looks good. Man, I'm looking at that right now. I ate Taco Bell for dinner, and like, it's just, we weren't even eating the same genre of food.
that's fair. And then aforementioned third Pelton brother Nate Taggart said, "Wait a second, I was just there at Tacos Chukis as well."
Really?
So we're sending multiple listeners to Tacos Chukis in the same evening. That's where we are right now.
And this person who says, "Oh no, first the analytics nerds took over football, now food as well." It's been taken over.
Yeah. Where have you been, good sir? Where have you been? So that transitions us naturally, I think, into this week's.
Well, I also want to mention before then that if you haven't listened to this, first go ahead and subscribe to the Talkin' Taco Time feed right now. Leave your ratings and your reviews of Talkin' Taco Time. You have to develop a nifty logo that's not too copyright infringy.
It'll be a cactus talking into a microphone.
I'm going to come up with the idea for it, but you're going to execute it and I'm going to take all the credit. Full page ad in the paper. But when you're not subscribing to that feed and giving it 5-star ratings and reviews, you should also go ahead and listen to our draft review podcast, which we sort of mentioned with Ben B.
Yeah, I mentioned it specifically, didn't I?
You mentioned that we talked to him on that, but not to go back and listen to it. It's still very relevant stuff on that podcast. If you want to hear about whether the Seahawks should run more, really, it's decided right there.
Pretty much. That'll also be the series, the subject of his series of Ben B's articles on The Athletic Seattle.
All of them, 100% of them.
So anyways, this week's taco/burrito review, and maybe more, was El Camion, which is a number of food trucks as well as one physical location, that being in Ballard, which is where
I was a little bit let down to go to El Camion at not El Camion.
Yeah. Previously, I had been to the food truck that operates outside of CenturyLink Field and Safeco Field one time, and it was a distinctly unmemorable experience, but I also didn't know, like, I wasn't planning ahead in the same way that I was here in terms of what yes. to order. And you look at the menu, and it's a good-looking menu, mm-hmm. I gotta say. And what I realized is that it turns out I'm not actually a fan of tacos.
Okay.
I'm actually a fan of bolitas.
Wow.
They are my number one, I think.
This is like when we were doing a dumpling bracket and we kind of just wrote off dumplings and just judged them by the bow.
Yes, that's very similar to that.
we're like, look, we know this is a dumpling bracket, but have you tried the bow?
Like the bow is a cousin to the dumpling. The molita is definitely a cousin to the taco. So the order that we got collectively, you did not have the molita. Did you? You had taco? No, you had a burrito.
I had a burrito and I was going to have what they call a gordita, which is kind of like a taco on a thick shell, like a thick round shell. Most of us are familiar with gorditas from Taco Bell.
Not at all like that, as it turns out.
I mean, there are some similarities. It's a thicker tortilla, right?
Yes, but it's still like a rounded, like, you know, similar to the Taco Bell tacos, the gordita. In this case, it's a flat surface, more kind of similar to the huarache that I described a few weeks ago.
Oh, I was thinking it's like a street taco with like a thick tortilla. But I didn't actually get to eat my gordita because the burrito was so giant. I ate this at like 2 o'clock and did not eat for the rest of the day. The thought of that gordita was disgusting to me because I had just consumed so much food.
So this was also my big takeaway, is the quantities here, the portion.
Whew.
I was thinking that, like, when we went to the taco bus, the molita was, like, basically the same size as a taco. It was on a tortilla, two tortillas the same size with cheese and meat in between them. And in this case, though, it was a much larger tortilla. It was, like, basically getting close to a quesadilla size at mm-hmm. this point. And they also had avocado on both that and the gordita. So I ordered like two tacos.
You ordered an incredible amount of food.
And a molita And then I was going to have one of the gorditas. And
a tamal.
Oh, but
the tamal never did not come.
There were zero tamales, as it turned out.
If there's one similarity to Taco Bell, there was an item that just didn't go, did not show up.
So right before we were recording our draft recap pod, I ate the
Melita. You made Ben B listen to you eat food for an extended period of time.
I ate the Melita, a gordita, and one of the tacos. And then you left the other gordita, and then I had the leftover taco, and I ended up having those for lunch the next day.
Oh, so you had the gordita again?
Oh, yeah. All right. Yeah, it held up. It held up.
So what is your review for all of this quantity of food that you had?
I thought it was really good. I mean, I don't know if the meat was outstanding. I don't know if it was top tier, but the quantity of it, and I just think, and the variety of different ways you can get your whatever kind of Mexican food you're looking for, I liked all of it. What was your thought?
I have two separate thoughts. I have my less critical opinion about it, and then my maybe slightly more critical. You know, if we're talking this is an exercise in finding the best burrito slash taco in Seattle. We should
slash
be looking
Melita.
slash actually only Melitas. We should be looking at this from a pretty critical mindset, right?
Okay.
In the past, I'd had their breakfast burritos, and it really didn't. The breakfast burrito didn't really stand out to me. Like you mentioned, it being kind of just a non-memorable experience. But this time, I feel like the burrito stood out.
Okay.
I mean, first, just the weight of it. It is a heavy burrito, and it is gigantic. It's almost like, I would say, 1.5 Chipotle burritos.
Wow.
Like, I can eat. Earlier this week, I ate a Chipotle burrito and a Chipotle quesadilla in one sitting.
You can maybe the listener can't tell how proud of himself Tristan looks as he's describing this.
Person, I was like waiting for the quesadilla at the register, and the person there was like, "Are you okay?" And it's like, "I just ordered a burrito and a quesadilla. Of course I'm not okay." Anyway, this burrito was dense and it was big. There is so much to it. I enjoyed eating almost every single second of this burrito. I ate it driving. I'm like pouring hot sauce on it while driving, because I do a lot of things while driving. But there was exactly what I was looking for in that Taco Street burrito, right? There was sour cream in it. There was a lot of cheese in it. There was pico. It had all the different flavors. If I have to have, I have two complaints.
Okay.
Complaint number one is that the cheese was excellent. It was almost like, I don't even know how to describe the cheese. It was like a cotija cheese that had, it was really greasy in a good way, but
the Melita was also very greasy, but not complaining.
It was not spread evenly throughout the burrito.
Ah, yes. One of the key qualifications for a strong burrito.
So I was just like, is there even cheese in this? Until, I mean, I was enjoying eating it, but I got like 2/3 of the way into the burrito before there was any cheese. And then the last third was almost all cheese bites, which granted, all cheese bites are amazing. It was almost like I had a burrito and a quesadilla all in one.
Quesarito?
It's really the dream meal. If I had one more complaint, the meat didn't really stand out to me.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Like, I didn't taste the meat any different than I tasted anything else. I had the al pastor. But at the same time, I don't fault this burrito necessarily for that. There was too much good flavor in it. I would eat this burrito 10 times out of 10. I would never question getting this burrito again.
You mentioned pouring sauce on it. They had kind of like a smoky chipotle sauce, kind of. And I really enjoyed that.
I think you missed out on some of the better sauces. Like the green avocado style sauce. That's what I was eating the burrito with.
I don't know if I got that. I don't think that was in the bag.
That didn't make it to you.
Oh, okay. Now the truth comes out.
That was consumed before then. We'll have to go back. But they've got breakfast mulitas.
The breakfast mulita doesn't appear to have any meat in it. I looked at that, but I think it's just egg. So I think I might be out of that. But maybe that's because you have a choice of meat and I was missing that. I don't know.
No, it doesn't look like there's meat, but I bet you could add it.
Okay. I see where your head's at. If they have chorizo, then I'm definitely in.
I'm pretty in on a breakfast mulita. I'm in on breakfast burritos of any kind. So, but overall, the experience was an excellent experience. I loved going there. I thought the service was good. I had a Jamaica drink, and the person complimented my ordering it, which is just a great thing when the person at the restaurant is like, "Oh, good choice." You always feel good about that, right?
I always think, "Oh, they must be telling everyone that."
Everybody, they're not telling you. Not everybody's getting the Jamaica drink.
I thought that it was really good, despite the fact that it was at least an hour between when you ordered it and I eventually got it.
It's so dense that it stayed warm. Like, the Mrs. Fantasy Genius had a quesadilla, and I swear to God, it weighed 8 pounds.
That seems unlikely. That's the weight of a newborn child?
Yeah, it was maybe even more than a newborn child. Look, there's I've had a lot of newborn children.
Yes, I mean, that's true. There's only one location in this bracket that serves Mexican food the size of babies, and that's the burritos at the place whose name I cannot...
Gorditos?
Yeah, Gorditos.
So we have to come to the question of, is this the best burrito in Seattle / taco?
No.
Still no.
Yeah, I mean, it's not tacos, choosy. But this is a very strong contender so far. I rated it a 90.
I would maybe even go a little bit higher than that.
Interesting.
Despite those complaints, like I said, like these are just fluff. Like, I have complaints about Tacos Jukis sometimes. You know, everything could be improved slightly, but it was just such a good experience all around. Considering that, like, you're eating it after an hour, I'm eating it in the car. You know, these are not like the ideal experiences to eat burritos and tacos, and it still was an excellent experience. I think it was a 92.
Well, right now, I think this is, I mean, it's solidly in the bracket, whatever bracket we end up doing at the end here.
This is the number two seed to me right now.
Interesting. Okay.
As of right now, I think it goes Tacos Chugi's clear number one. I think it's this and then the Taco Bus at number three.
Do we have a thought for next week where we're going to
go? We're circling Marination.
Well, I'm eventually going to get to Marination. I swear I eventually am, but it keeps getting postponed my lunch there.
You're never going to go to Marination.
For next week, I had a couple of ideas.
Okay.
I'm going to be heading to Key Arena for the first Seattle Storm preseason game next Tuesday. And before that, I would like to get a burrito. And so I've got a couple of options in the armory, either the breakfast burrito at Skillet.
Okay.
Or there's Blue Water Taco. Which of those, would you want to go to one of those?
I don't feel like Skillet should be in this bracket.
I like the idea that Skillet would be in both brackets, having previously been in the burger bracket last year.
I mean, I've had their breakfast burrito many times, but they only do the breakfast burrito. I don't think they have a normal burrito on the menu.
I think that is correct.
Which, granted, you don't need another burrito if you have a breakfast burrito. It's great. But I just don't, I feel like it's not in the spirit of the search for Seattle's best taco / burritos.
All right, that's fair.
Blue Water is a burrito restaurant.
Yes, and a taco and burrito restaurant. Okay, so we'll do there. In which case, I think I'll probably do the location. There's another location on, I don't know if it's 2nd Avenue, on the other side of Key Arena, and it's a standalone location. I think it's better
quality.
Oh, there's
actually a Blue Water near me, now that I think about it.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right, so we'll
next, across the street from the place that just says corned beef really big across the top.
I'm always curious about that.
You gotta
place.
Go there. It's so good. I'll tell you what is really good there.
Corned beef. That's my rule. If it's on the,
I think it was
the name.
I think it was
there.
Loyal listener Lion Butt the Third who recommended to me going there, and I was like, I have to. Lion Butt suggested it.
Nice.
I've got to go.
Anyway, Blue Water Taco, a classic burrito / taco place in Seattle, one of my most frequented lunch spots back when I worked for the Sonics way back in the day. So I'm looking forward to reviewing it.
Can I fire off some more food takes here?
Okay.
Because we're currently within the last week. I was at In-N-Out.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
I mean, it feels like ancient history at this point.
It does, because you went there before the NFL draft.
So online, it says that this In-N-Out that's near the airport, near LAX, is open at 10:30 a.m.
Uh-huh.
I land, I'm like off the plane at like 10:02 a.m. So in the spirit of Kevin Pelton, I decide to walk there. There's no car service. There's no Uber. There's no Lyft. I'm walking to that In-N-Out.
That is a very me move.
It's 23 minutes. I think I was mocked by the people that I was hanging out with later for doing it. They're like, can you even do that? How did you get there?
I am wondering, it was not that hard.
I
am wondering how you actually like physically walk out of LAX.
Just walk right out.
All right. Okay.
You just cross across and boom, you're at the In-N-Out.
All right.
23 minutes later.
There's two In-N-Outs near LAX. I went to one of them when I was there during All-Star break, but I think it was not the one you went to because I heard that the other one is closer.
Really?
Yes.
You went to the far In-N-Out?
Yeah, well, I wasn't going from the airport.
So I walked to the In-N-Out. I actually get there early because it was such a brisk walk. It's like 10:20, and I find that the In-N-Out is already open.
Wow, In-N-Out always under-promising and over-delivering.
It was an In-N-Out miracle. There was no line. My food came quickly. I mean, it was one of the better In-N-Out experiences I've ever had, right? Because I've mostly been to the Hollywood In-N-Out, which is just a bitch to go to. Like, the wait, you're going to be waiting for at least 40 minutes at that one. It's not the most pleasant experience.
I mean, that's true of most In-N-Outs in my experience.
This, I had my food within 5 minutes. I walked right up and ordered, which they do often. They're able to get you through the line quickly, but then they...
Well, they're taking time. They're taking
care with the food. They put so much care into every burger that you want it to take a little extra time.
Right.
But they weren't too backlogged, so I got the food quickly. How critical can I be here?
Of In-N-Out?
The animal fries were not very good.
How so?
It was kind of just like a big gob of cheese, and it encompassed, it kind of like dried a little bit, and it encompassed like four fries.
Yeah, that's, you want a nice even spread of the cheese, much like with the burrito.
It just didn't, it was almost difficult to eat, where I had to like pick pieces of the animal style and put it on to other pieces. It was a little bit too much work at that point.
I hear where you're coming from here.
My hands were getting dirty. I mean, I still love the animal fries. They were excellent, but it was just... I wish that it was a little bit more evenly spread.
I'm actually not sure when was the last time I had the animal fries at In-N-Out.
I figure I'm there. I need to have the animal fries.
I've been defaulting to just getting the animal burger and a shake the last few times I've been there.
Now, so some people who are better at maximizing value here would say, don't get the animal fries. Instead, get a second burger.
I mean, you can name Ben B here. We've named him enough times in this podcast. One more isn't going to hurt.
Full page ad in the paper for me. You're welcome. But I didn't do that. Honestly, the thought didn't even occur to me of doing a second burger. But that's what I should have done. That was the play here. I should have been having four patties, two double doubles animal style, and it would have been the perfect In-N-Out experience.
All right. Well, that's good to know for next time. And I will keep in mind how quickly one can get there from LAX.
Dalton brothers are going to be walking that every single time we go there. They're like, somebody will ask what time your plane lands. And it's like, well, it's not really what time the plane lands. It's also about the 20-minute walk to In-N-Out and then eating at In-N-Out.
It's a sneak. It is officially.
It's a sneak.
A sneak.
Being willing to walk 25 minutes from the airport through some roads that are slightly questionable. You have to find, the Google Maps has like this weird zigzag. And I'm like, what is that? And I'm like, oh, it's a staircase that you have to go down from an overpass. So, you know.
Fair enough.
But it was an easy walk. Brisk. Loved every second of it.
All right, should we talk NBA playoffs?
Do we have to?
We don't have to.
No, we should. This Sixers cast.
Yeah, it was a rough blow for Trust the Pelton cast.
Trust the Pelton cast.
We're doing a lot of naming podcasts recently. But you know what? I'm going to offer you some reason for hope.
Oh, really?
So I have a story coming Thursday on ESPN.com. Mm. Fortunately, I don't think it's ESPN Insider, so you'll be able to read it.
Wow.
Discussing how the team that has the better shot quality in the first game of a series is actually more likely to go on and win the series than the team that wins the game.
Really?
Yes. And the Sixers, in this opening game, had the better shot quality than the Celtics, but they just missed a bunch of open
threes. Did anybody tell that to the Portland Trailblazers?
Well, funny you say that, because the teams that in the last four playoffs plus this year's first round, home teams that lost game one but had the better shot quality, like the Blazers, went 12-3 in those series. The Blazers were one of the three exceptions.
They were the three?
Yeah. But teams that lost game one on the road and had better shot quality still went on to win the series half the time.
Interesting.
So there's reason to believe, especially because the Sixers were pretty heavily favored going into this series, that they're still in okay shape.
Okay. I mean, it's one game in a 7-game series. I wasn't panicked anyway. But this is reason to be even more excited about their prospects.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a long series.
Do we expect Markelle Fultz to play at any point in the series?
No. I believe.
Wait, how big of a blowout would it have to be one way or the other for Markelle to play?
Well, that's what's so weird is Brett Brown did empty his bench at the end of game one, but he didn't play Fultz. Instead, he played Jared Bayless, who has not played since January.
Jared Bayless!
And will be the source of extensive discussion on Trust the Pelton cast this summer as to whether the Sixers can move the final year of his contract or have to stretch him. So it's unclear. He talked about Fultz.
Who signed Jared Bayless? This wasn't a hinky thing, was it?
That was Brian Kelechel. That was his first move.
Man. Look, Trust the Pelton cast.
I mean, his first move was drafting Ben Simmons, but okay.
Pretty solid first move.
Yeah, you can't complain about it that way.
Trust the Pelton cast are big hinky believers, right?
Oh, of course. That's not even a question.
He's in the Trust the Pelton cast logo. I mean, you can see it right there.
It's like the two of us with hinky in the middle. It's his third Pelton brother in the Trust the Pelton cast.
He might actually record that podcast.
He would have to stop at midway through to review his previous hour and how productive he'd been. Hope someone gets that joke. Okay, Fultz. So Brett Brown, after the day after, he didn't say anything about why he didn't play Fultz in that situation, but did say that, you know, he had considered playing him, that he was not completely gone from the Sixers rotation. But look, at this point, TJ McConnell is the better player. When it comes to winning a playoff game, TJ McConnell is the better option. It did seem like maybe, you know, the Sixers could use a spark in that game, maybe throw Fultz in there at some point. The one thought I had as far as not using him in garbage time is, like, Boston fans are probably going to be all over him given the Fultz-Tatum trade. Like, when Fultz was going through his shoulder injuries earlier this year, 95% of people seemed very sympathetic, and the 5% of people who weren't were Celtics fans who were like so excited that
5% was the city of Boston.
Not only was Tatum great, but also Fultz was struggling so badly.
I don't know why that like makes them, I guess they feel better about the trade or whatever.
Yes, they get to talk about how what a genius Danny Ainge is.
Great. Yeah, I can understand that. Just save, he didn't play Markel Fultz. Not, he just wanted to save him from throwing him into that fire.
That's the best explanation I can come up with.
Look, when you're playing Jared Bayless, like,
no, right. I mean, and the game was over. Like, that's they were putting in the end of the bench.
Okay, what do you think their percentage chances are of winning game two?
Probably about 60%. I think they're solidly favored, really? Even on the road. Because the team that loses game one tends to do much better in game two.
All right. Well, I feel much better about this series now. You are positive.
I was pretty positive about the Blazers, too.
It's just funny how different talking to you right now is than talking to you in our private chat where the sky is falling at all times.
Look, there's a reason we had to make rules for this podcast about whether we're allowed to discuss what we say during games.
You defied them. Do you remember you defied them with Katie when she had to eat the hat?
Oh, no.
Okay, so that's Philadelphia in pretty good shape. A team that's not in pretty good shape, who, since we last spoke, you cautioned me about getting too excited about this last week. Do you know what I'm talking about?
The Pels?
The Oklahoma City Thunder.
Oh, that's right.
Since we last spoke, they were eliminated from playoff contention. Paul George will now be a free agent, and Carmelo Anthony will have the option to opt in at $28 million a year, and he will not be coming off the bench.
I mean, can I get very pedantic here for like one fan who cares about this? Anthony has an early termination option rather than a player option, so he would have to actually exercise the ETO. If he declines it, then he gets the $28 million.
Okay.
Rather than opting into the $28 million. He's great. Assumed the $28
million. This is the kind of stuff that you won't be getting on Talkin' Taco Time.
No, definitely not. Definitely not.
Yeah, there might be. You'd be like, it'd be slightly cheaper to get the...
You got to get the combo and not get them individually.
You're anti-combo, though.
Yes, I am.
We'll talk about our Taco Time orders later.
That's a totally separate thing.
On a completely different podcast.
Yeah, watching Russell Westbrook shoot as many times as he shot in Game 6, it was not the greatest performance from the Thunder to close out the season, I would say.
Well, even aside from that, like, look, we all celebrated the Thunder losing that game. The city of Seattle applauded. Jake Wan retweeted everybody. Everybody was very happy.
Yeah, that's true.
But it was about
Did
more.
David Locke wore a Detlef Schrempf jersey to celebrate? Did you see that?
Over his button-up shirt.
Yes.
Yeah, because that's how they do in Utah.
It is.
But it was about more than just that loss. This was a season that we went into the season, I would say at least mildly terrified about the Thunder, right? We were on high alert. This was the season after people in Oklahoma City's media were saying things like Sam Presti just completed one of the best off seasons ever.
I mean, people outside of Oklahoma City media were saying this as well. Let's be clear. This is not like a homer take. I mean, I don't know what grade
this wasn't the take you had. You said to have a healthy level of fear.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what grade I gave the Thunder on their off season, but I'm sure it was a good grade. I'm sure it was quite high.
And it turns out that off season managed to set them in such a bad situation going forward.
I give them an A+.
Oh my God.
I mean, they weren't the only team. I also gave them to the Warriors and Rockets. So I don't know about...
How are they doing?
Yeah, pretty well. So I don't know about the best off seasons of all time, but it certainly was a really good off season.
Jesus Christ. Well, it doesn't look now, a year later, like it was that great of an off season.
I mean, look, if Andre Robertson had stayed healthy, things may have gone very different for the Thunder. They'll get him back next year. If they can re-sign Paul George, they'll be looking at a huge luxury tax bill, and the Melo thing is going to be a problem. But this still could be a better team next year than it was this year.
How old is Paul George?
I mean, he's right in his prime.
How old is Russell Westbrook?
Late prime.
Let's say that you take away one more. Let's say, hypothetically, Paul George re-signs. Which, what would you put percentage chances that at?
I don't know. I mean, it would be a complete guess. 20%.
Okay. So this 20% chance thing happens that Paul George wants to be back in Oklahoma. He loves the idea of playing with Carmelo for one more year. You have this one season of Carmelo. Like, I mean, how high over the luxury tax would they be with all these players back?
I mean, they'd make some other moves. They would either stretch. They would probably stretch Kyle
Singler.
Could they
trade James Harden again?
It's a good question. I don't think they're able to do that now. At this point, even with the Singler stretch, they would be looking at a luxury tax bill in the range of $65 million, wow. $70
million. So, I mean, they're in cap hell for at least next year. And then you look at 2 years after that, and you've got a Russell Westbrook who's 2 years older and a Paul George who's 2 years older. No real youth aside from Steven Adams. Like, this is not a roster in good shape right now.
I mean, they would be paying Westbrook, Paul George, and Steven Adams combined somewhere in the neighborhood of $95 million.
Carmelo Anthony is a secret agent of Not the Thunder. He's the not the Thunder MVP. Kevin Durant has to hand over his trophy to Carmelo Anthony.
What an emotional ceremony that will be.
He's going to thank Russ the entire time. It was really all about him. But I'm just saying that to me, the threat level, we're always high. Always high, but I feel like we can relax a little bit here.
The moment you relax is the moment they trade for Paul George.
I would love to see them trade for Paul George again. Let's see who they can give up this time. What future all-stars they can trade for Paul George this time. But then also...
They still traded a year of Serge Ibaka for a year of Paul George. That's a trade I'll make any day. Plus the year of Oladipo and Sabonis. Because they got those guys for Ibaka going into the last year of his contract. It was a good deal.
They would be in a much better place having the Victor Oladipo who's playing in Indiana.
But the Victor Oladipo who's playing in Indiana, I mean, I don't think he would be able to do the same things in Oklahoma City.
Is it because of Russell Westbrook that he couldn't?
Yeah.
Because Russell Westbrook makes the players around him worse? How hot of a take am I going to get you to say here?
No, I don't buy that Russell Westbrook makes the players around him worse. But if you have multiple players who are better with the ball in their hands, there's going to be significant diminishing returns to that. That's true of every star player. That was true of LeBron when he played with D-Wade in Miami. So that would have also been true of Oladipo and Westbrook now that Oladipo has proven that he is someone who can be good with the ball in his hands, which he was never capable of previously at any stage of his career in Orlando or in Oklahoma City.
But it still feels like so much of their young core is now gone, and now they're left with hoping that Andre Robertson is back next year. Most likely Paul George. More likely than not, Paul George.
You need to look at Andre Robertson's RPM a little more closely. That's what you need to do. Now, granted, there are some issues with Andre Robertson offensively in the playoffs that we never got around to this season, but
we didn't get to see this year. Anyway, this was a very good offseason and a very good conclusion to the season for Not the Thunder.
Indeed it was.
I think we should be toasting to that also.
I mean,
all right.
Anything else on the NBA?
I think I'm good.
Okay. All right, let's get to Seattle sports, and we'll start with the latest on the arena front. The Seattle City Council Select Committee on Civic Arenas met for the first time since they approved the Key Arena rebuilding plan from Oakview Group to hear an update on the status of that plan on Monday. Seattle Center Director Robert Nellums reiterated that the final event at Key Arena will be a Golden State Warriors game on October 6th. It's obviously been previously reported, including confirmed by me, that that will be against the Sacramento Kings in a preseason game. That won't be announced probably until the summer, just given the timing of when NBA preseason schedules are typically announced. But again, every reason to expect that game will be played at Key Arena this year. Then the building will be vacated by October 14th to begin the construction process. The Select Committee on Civic Arenas is scheduled to meet again on May 10th to discuss transportation. And then May 14th, coming up after that, will be the open house at Seattle Center to discuss the environmental impact study and the impact that the Key Arena rebuilding process will have on the local environment.
All right, which we discussed last week.
Yes. Yeah. Time for your favorite segment. Don't burn yourself. We got Mariners hot takes coming at you.
I wish that I had more takes built up here, but I do have a recent take from earlier today, James Paxton, through seven innings, is sitting at 16 strikeouts, 105 pitches. I have three words for Scott Servais and the Mariners. Let it ride! How is he not out there for the eighth and ninth inning in a game that they ended up losing with history? He's got Kerry Wood, Roger Clemens, two inferior pitchers in his sights. And he doesn't pitch the eighth and the ninth inning because he's at 105 pitches. There is no situation where James Paxton should not be targeting history.
You're willing to sacrifice the chance that is his pitch count escalates, that he suffers an injury?
For this one game? Of course! It's one game. It's like a player who has a perfect game.
Also, it's one game.
This, if he were to break the record for, or tie the record for strikeouts in a single game, that is a bigger deal than throwing a perfect game. But if he had a perfect game, would they have taken him out? Three words for you. No fucking way.
Oh, wow. You're into the three words today.
They wouldn't have, right? How many people have struck out 20 batters in history? Two people. How many perfect games have there been? A lot.
Three words. Three true outcomes.
I don't even know what that's in regard to, but I like it.
It's the idea that the only true outcomes, like the ball should never be hit in play. The fielder should never do anything. The only outcomes are strikeout, walk, or home run. And James Paxton was pitching two of the three true outcomes today, good sir. The fielders were not so busy. But yes, the bullpen blew this game in his stead, giving up three runs in the eighth and ninth as the Mariners lost 3-2. I was watching this game, and Nelson Cruz comes up with the bases loaded and strikes out looking. It was not a great call. And then ninth inning, Mariners down a run. Ichiro comes up with the tying run in scoring position. You're like, oh, is this finally going to be Ichiro's moment? No, of course not. So it was a really depressing ending to this game.
I've got some other takes for you. I haven't been watching baseball because I haven't been watching the Mariners because baseball is actually the only thing more boring than a J. Cole album.
Oh, no.
But what did I say at the beginning of the season when people were, this is a, you know what? I'm gonna say it. Full page ad in the paper. You're welcome. What did people say when we brought back Ichiro?
Everyone was excited. Full page ad.
They wanted to see Ichiro in a Mariners jersey again. And now, a month into the season, people are furious that Ichiro is still on the roster.
The thing is, this no longer even qualifies as a hot take. This is like the coldest of takes that Ichiro should not be on the Mariners.
The take I called it right. First, I was there before anybody hating on Ichiro. I was hating on Ichiro in 2001. That's how early I was to this take.
Three words. Called it then.
you're really taking that. Okay, second take. I'm just building up all the takes I've got. This is a brief one.
The takes are building steam.
How have the Astros played so many more games than the Mariners?
And the Mariners did have a weirdly high number of off days. They got snowed out at some point, right?
Maybe.
I think so.
That could have happened. Look, I'm not paying attention. I'm not listening to J. Cole and I'm not paying attention to the Mariners. Those are two things that are not happening.
This is actually J. Cole hot takes.
Last take. A year ago, last summer, on this podcast, Eli Anderson, who books Capital Block Party, said that he's come to terms that, or he's starting to realize that the Mariners will win a World Series during his lifetime.
He said he had come to terms with them not doing it and had to be okay with it, and then had changed his mind, right?
I think we need to start understanding, we'd come to terms that there would never be a hitter as good as Ken Griffey Jr. on the Mariners. And I think we need to reevaluate that assessment.
Oh, wow. This is a Mitch Haniger hot take.
Because Mitch Haniger walks the face of the earth and he plays in Seattle.
You know what I've always said? When players are on pace to do something through the month of April in baseball, they always stay on that pace.
1,000 plus ops, 10 home runs in April. He is unstoppable as a hitter. This is Mitch Haniger's team.
Regression to the mean is just a myth. I've always said that.
It is only a matter of time before Jay-Z is in the Mariners front office demanding one more year to get to $250
million. Is he also Mitch Haniger's agent?
No.
Okay.
I'm just saying, that's he's on Robinson Cano's level. That is where Mitch Haniger is at. Robinson Cano looks like Ichiro compared to Mitch Haniger.
Wow.
He is a slap singles hitter compared to Ichiro.
This take will definitely not age poorly. I guarantee it.
Ah, those are the piecemeal takes that I have.
I think we pieced together a nice meal out of it. It worked. Should we move on to the Sounders, who, speaking of frustrating performances, The Sounders opened up the new Bank of California Stadium against LAFC, who you'll recall, of course, previously played their first ever match against the Seahawks here in against the Sounders here in Seattle. Came into Seattle and got the win in the MLS season opener. This time, Sounders, with Clint Dempsey back in the starting lineup, despite playing a makeshift back line, they were without both starting center backs, Chad Marshall due to a neck sprain and Roman Torres a late scratch with a hamstring strain. Gustav Svensson moved back from defensive midfield, and then Kim Keehee got his first start in center as a center back and did a really nice job, showed, you know, the value of his size at that position. And the Sounders were oh so close to spoiling the party and leaving Bank of California Stadium with a clean sheet despite the makeshift back line. But there was a foul outside the box in the 93rd minute, and that gave LAFC's Lorenz Simon a free kick, which he sent directly at Stefan Frey. It was low, kind of knuckled a little bit, and Frey could not hold it, went through him for the only goal of the match in a bit of a howler. So that wasn't great.
Are the Sounders bad?
All right, hold on a second. Because here's the thing. The Sounders, again in this match, were better in terms of expected goals. I mean, the right result here was a draw. These two teams were equivalent. It should have been a draw, but it shouldn't have been a Sounders loss. And it was just because of one moment in a goalkeeping mistake. But here's the thing, because we have a special segment here. Hold on.
Oh, wow.
The tradition of Festivus begins with the airing of grievances. I got a lot of problems with you people. Now, you're going to hear about it.
This is grievance, not about the Sounders. Not about the Sounders being bad. This is a grievance about Sounders fans. Chill the fuck out. Yes. People are calling for Garth Lagerwey to be fired. People are talking about, apparently people are talking about the team quitting, because Brian Schmetzer had a quote at practice at training on Wednesday where he said, "I need to tell everybody that we, the players on the field, haven't quit on the fans. They haven't quit. They busted their ass in LA." Like, was that a question? Like, here's the thing about soccer. This is more true in baseball. It's slightly less true in soccer and somewhat less true in football and basketball. How hard you try has no relationship with how well you do. Like, other than like someone who's like extremely lazy, or a team that like France in the 2012 World Cup, I guess that was 2010. I can do math. Like, very rarely do teams play poorly because they're not trying hard enough. They play poorly because, number one, they're not skilled enough, and number two, because of fucking luck. Their expected goals are great. They're going to eventually turn things around. Now, look, it would be better if they had more points. It would be better if they occasionally scored goals. I want all of those things too. But don't get upset at everyone just because of bad luck. This evens out. It happens every year. It happened 2 years ago. It happened last year. Like, how many times does it have to happen before you figure out that maybe it's going to happen again? Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Fool me three times, shame on Sounders fans. Like, everyone is so on edge about this. We were in the MLS Cup 2 years in a row. We won the MLS Cup 2 years ago. This is so far. Like, even the Seahawks, by the way, are still within the five-year period, grace period. So we probably shouldn't be complaining about them as much as we are. But the Sounders are 2 years removed from winning the MLS Cup. You cannot be this unhappy about everything. Chill the fuck out. All right.
Wow. Was not expecting that. You're going to wake up some children. Oh, man. Well, I guess I'm going to chill the fuck out over here. Message taken.
It's always a good strategy. And this is why I think, like, following things statistically is just a happier play to live. You could tell how happy I was that whole time. This Saturday, the Sounders, in a rare non-national TV game, will be taking on the Columbus Crew at home. After last year's miracle run to the Eastern Conference Finals, with the future of the franchise in Columbus in jeopardy, which it still is, the Crew come in sixth in the East with 1.56 points per match so far. They're ninth in 538 Soccer Power Index. Former Galaxy striker Jassy Zardes, acquired in an offseason trade, leads the team with 5 goals. He's among the MLS's leading goal scorers, and Federico Higuain, also among the leading assisters with 4. So watch for the two of them as part of the Crew attack.
Okay.
I think there's a good chance of the Sounders taking points from this match, but then there's probably a better chance of them having really good expected goals.
I'm not going to say anything because I'm scared about getting yelled at.
Like, just don't call for people to be fired. That's ridiculous.
Oh, my God.
On the UW sports front, baseball took 2 out of 3 from Wazoo last weekend to improve to 11-7 in Pac-12 play. We'll be in the desert to face Arizona State this weekend. Softball, the news was less good. A stunning sweep at home at the hands of number two Oregon means the Huskies have now lost six in a row after previously losing two games all season up to that point. They have dropped all the way to fourth in the Pac-12 standings behind UCLA, Oregon, and Arizona State, and they will close Pac-12 play this weekend at Oregon State, trying to find some momentum heading into the NCAA tournament.
I'm ready for your rant about chilling the fuck out.
No.
Panic. This is, panic now.
This is a problem. This is bad.
Man.
We're no longer a softball
can't
school.
Can't even be a softball
You know what
school.
We are? We're an NFL draft school.
Are we toasting?
Yeah. The Huskies had five players drafted last weekend. This we didn't discuss in our draft recap pod. Starting, of course, that's got a lid on it. With the 12th overall pick, Vita Vea going to Tampa Bay after they traded down to that spot. It seems like the Buccaneers take a lot of Huskies.
They take a lot of Huskies. I mean, it's almost kind of amazing that Vita Vea went pick 12 and it didn't even like really register for us. And I think you mentioned that we were just kind of used to this at this point, having Huskies go pretty high in the draft.
Yeah, we take it for granted at this point. And like Vea, we kind of knew all along he was going to be a high pick. So yeah, there wasn't the same degree of excitement. In some ways, I was actually more excited about the next Husky draft.
First off, I just want to say about Vita Vea. He's in the NFC, but thank God he's not in the NFC West.
He's because the next player is, in fact, in the NFC West. And that's Dante Pettis going with the 44th pick, the 12th pick of the second round to the San Francisco 49ers.
It is not going to be fun watching Jimmy G to Dante next year.
And it feels like we're going to see that a lot because I think Dante's pretty good. I'm very in on Dante Pettis as a prospect. Then next up, of course, Will Disley going in the fourth round to the Seahawks. We did discuss that at length.
How the thrill is back.
Yes. And then in the sixth round, back-to-back picks, a pair of Husky linebackers.
Wow, they went back-to-back.
Yeah, Azeem Victor going with the 216th pick to the Oakland Raiders after his disappointing senior season for the Huskies. And then one pick later, 217th to AFC West rival Denver, it's Keyshawn Bieria.
Oh, that's awesome. Seeing both of them go. I mean, Azeem Victor, obviously, maybe more skilled, more of a project, though. Keyshawn Bieria, maybe a little bit less skilled of a linebacker, but could be somebody who catches on in special teams. Could see the field for Denver occasionally.
And then three undrafted Huskies hooking on with teams. I'm not sure if these are, you know, for actual training camp contracts as opposed to, you know, just be attending the rookie camps there. But LaVon Coleman to the Houston Texans, Coleman Shelton also to the San Francisco 49ers, and then Ezekiel Turner to the Arizona Cardinals. So, again, an NFC West theme there.
Yes. I mean, I think teams tend to draft regionally.
Right.
I was a little bit surprised that Coleman Shelton didn't get drafted at all.
That's mildly surprising.
Maybe he'd be a 6th, 7th round draft pick. We'll see about the other two.
Yep.
But the thing is, when you look at this, it's awesome to see 5 Huskies drafted, 8 Huskies end up on teams. And a player going near the top of the draft, it's something that Coach Pete can use in recruiting. I feel like defensive linemen, I mean, if you're a defensive lineman who wants to see yourself play in the NFL, given the success that we've had with, well, not necessarily success, but the high draft selections, Danny Shelton, Vita Vea, other players throughout then, this is a program that you want to go to, right? If you're a player who wants to play in the NFL, UW is a program you should go to. But also that these 8 players have been lost from the team, and the team is still so stacked, right?
Right. Yeah, no, I mean they're projected to finish better than last year.
I mean, it's a real testament to what Chris Peterson has put together that you can lose players in the first round, the second round, fourth round, and 2 6-rounders, and I don't look at any of these players and say they're unreplaceable. I mean, the closest would probably be Dante Pettis, who feels a little bit like his production is going to be hard to replace, but I don't say that this team can't do it, and they have so much skill and depth, and in depth at almost every other position. We're in a golden age for Husky football right now. We should be thankful all the time.
Yeah, no, I would agree with all that. And, I mean, it seems like, you know, in terms of talking about taking it for granted, that we're probably going to see somewhat more of the same next year in terms of the Huskies getting drafted. I mean, you look at the 2019 projections that have come out early, and again, the Huskies figuring prominently. SI.com's big board mentioning Trey Adams is the top offensive lineman that they mentioned there. So.
Pretty amazing, right? Trey Adams feels like he could easily be a top 10 pick.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Are there any other Huskies who they mention?
That would be it as far as the SI.com big board. I mean, Miles Gaskin will be in the mix, you know, tough with running backs, and he doesn't have maybe ideal NFL size, but, you know, certainly I think you look at him as a middle round pick.
Then I could see Jake being drafted. He'll at the very least end up on a team.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he's probably more likely to end up being a training camp invite, an undrafted free agent, than he is to get drafted, just, you know, when you look at the physical tools and particularly his arm strength. But again, a lot to be determined by his senior season. Greg Gaines and then Caleb McGarry, two other seniors who could potentially be draftable. And then look at early entry candidates, both in the secondary, Taylor Rapp and then Byron Murphy, even though he's only played the one season because of the fact that he redshirted, will have 3 years and therefore be eligible to potentially consider. But we're a long ways away from that decision.
Yes. But I mean, the players from the secondary are going to play in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, there's a strong track record of putting secondary players and then defensive tackles, as you mentioned, in the NFL. Any other thoughts that you have on the Seahawks at this point?
I think we kind of got everything out. I don't really know. Are there any other takeaways? You said you did not want to talk about Shaquem Griffin's jersey number.
I have no takes on Shaquem Griffin's number.
You're very anti this.
I'm not anti. It's just I literally could not possibly care less.
Yeah, I feel like we got everything out. I mean, there are no new signings during that time period. If you want to hear our Seahawks takes, again, go back and listen to our post-draft recap with Ben B. And read him...
On The Athletic?
On The Athletic.
Yeah. All right. Well, on that note, thanks for listening.
Thanks.